Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to another edition of Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. For our radio audience, thank you all for joining us for what's going to be another great hour. For those joining us online, though, we have two great segments coming up for you. We're going to kick things off by speaking to Dr. Susan C. Ball. She's the author of the new book just released this month called Voices in the Band. We're going to talk to Susan not only about what it's been like for her to share her own story of being able to see the journey of HIV and AIDS in patients, but also the hope that is there as well. We're going to talk to Susan not only about what led her to write the book, but what it's been like for her to chronicle those individuals that literally have been on the front lines and what you all can learn from their story and their experiences. Susan, hello to you and welcome to the program.
Hi, Cyrus. Thank you.
You know, I should say, first of all, congratulations to you. The book right now is a number one bestseller on Amazon.com in the healthcare delivery category there. And I think the interesting thing about your book, and we can kind of begin the conversation here, is that, as I said to you before we went live, you are a doctor, but the book does not come across as something written from someone that is, you know, using, you know, who they are as a medical, you know, professional to be able to talk to us. You really are talking to us as individuals. What has it been like for you to see the way that people are already responding to the book?
Well, I really, you know, a goal of mine in writing the book was to make this time in history accessible to everybody, because it is a time that in the late 90s that is now somewhat lost, because AIDS is viewed as such a different epidemic, and
right.
People's view of HIV has changed, and that's evident, unfortunately, in some of the rises of new cases which we're seeing. But I also felt that this was a very important time in terms of what we could offer patients, in terms of the team approach my unit was able to provide, and that was very special.
Right, exactly. And I thought about myself, and we've had conversations on this program, Susan, over the years, especially about HIV and AIDS. I've had individuals, you know, who are impacted directly by HIV and AIDS, even individuals that are, you know, living with HIV and AIDS themselves. And the thing that has always gotten me is how there are so many different ways that individuals look either at individuals who have it or look at themselves, you know, who have it. Has that been one of the fascinating parts of this journey for you, about how there has been a difference now, especially in 2015, as the way that we look at individuals living with HIV and AIDS, because it's not automatically seen as a death sentence?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, there was such stigma in the 80s and into the 90s, and there still is in pockets of different communities. There still is a lot of stigma for people who have the illness, and many times people don't want others to know. That still exists. But overall, because we've been able to render HIV basically a chronic illness, you know, you can walk down the street and you could pass 10 people with HIV and have absolutely no idea, because people are living totally healthy, productive, you know, basically normal lives if they're in care and taking medication. So that's been a huge, really a monumental change from 20 years ago.
Yeah. You know, I could not help when I was reading this book, and since I knew I was going to be talking with you, I thought I'd ask the question, and if you choose not to answer, I totally understand. But, I have to say, you know, when I have talked to my friends, especially that are in the medical profession, the thing that frustrates them the most is that they come across something that they can't do anything about. Has that been one of the frustrating things for you in this profession, that, you know, even with all of the advancements that have come along, that there is still, you know, nothing that can eradicate HIV and AIDS from the patients?
Well, you may be aware that there's currently talk of cure. People are really actually talking about potentially curing AIDS. That's a ways off.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the frustration, I would say, has changed from the early days, as you know, mentioned in Voices in the Band, that where we really had no medicine to offer. Now we really do have effective medicine, and if patients choose to get in care and take these medications, they will really do very well. So the frustration for me at times is, when patients, for whatever reason, because of their own issues or because of social issues that prevent them from having access to care, when they aren't on medicine and so are still suffering from some of the problems that HIV can produce, when there is actually good treatment out there and patients either can't or don't access it, that's frustrating.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that, and because that was another thing that I have to say, I was just having a conversation with my mother, who hates going to the doctor. I was just having this conversation with her, like, look, you have Medicare, yeah. You have Medicaid, it's not like you're going to be out of a fortune, you know, but there are some people that just don't like to go. When I was reading your book, I thought it was so interesting to me, because I was raised a totally different way, that, look, you get your checkups, if something's wrong, you go and find out what it is. I mean, there were individuals that you share conversations with, Susan, in the book, where it's almost as if it's like, okay, you ask them, okay, are you taking your medicine? Well, yeah, I'm kind of taking it, I'm kind of taking care of myself. And then especially with some of these patients that are pregnant and,
yeah.
And have another life. I mean, what was that like for you to reflect on that? How even with what they were dealing with, that there was not the sense of urgency to do the most that they can for themselves?
Well, I think this is something that, is not unique to HIV, really.
Right.
I think doctors face this in patients through all strata of society and education and socioeconomic status. It's something that we have to acknowledge people's individual adult choices. Sometimes there's the case where really patients, don't have the access, and that's something that we can try and help them with. But when they make that choice and they're an adult and informed, it can be really frustrating. But ultimately, you can't really judge people. It's
right.
It's important to be able to say, my door as a physician, my door is always open to you. I may disagree with this particular choice right now, and I'm going to still push you to do this, but I'm not going to turn you away from coming to me and trying to get care here.
And with that being said, I do want to talk about the lighter side of this, and I would say that I think something that our listeners will definitely appreciate when they're reading the book, Susan, and that is the appreciation that individuals had for the work and have for the work that you and your team have been able to do. I mean, what is that like for you to be recognized as someone not only who was trying to do all that you can and was willing to do all that you can, but actually was able to get people to take care of themselves and to help them along that path?
Well, I was really fortunate to get the work that I did at the Center for Special Studies in 1992. Our team was really conceived in a very thoughtful way toward a multidisciplinary approach to patient care, but in that conception also involved caring for ourselves and for each other. And so there was a real sense of commitment, but a team approach, and really feeling like you were, my role as a physician was important, but there were many times when my role was not as important as what the social worker was doing or the nutritionist was doing. And I think that lack of hierarchy in the team for all of us reinforced our respect for each other and our pride in what we were doing. And that really definitely came across to the patients, and I think they felt like they were part of a family. Sounds a little trite, but I think they really felt like they were part of a community of caring and support at that time. And it was I was very fortunate to be part of that.
One of the individuals that you were able to get to open up and to be able to, I think, get to look at his life a little bit differently, and I had to mention this, and that is Sabir. And I think it was his story was really fascinating to me because, again, it includes some of what some people see as the telltale signs. Him, of course, as you remember, you were telling in the book about the lesions and how, he hadn't really thought about, I don't think, going to see anyone until the one appeared on his face. And he saw that the way that you worded it in the book that I made a note of was like a blazing neon sign, of the diagnosis. I mean, when you see how they opened up to you, Susan, about how at first he wouldn't even look at you, and then to be able to have those conversations, I mean, was those the moments that you look at and said, I really accomplished something today?
Well, there are definitely moments where you sit back at the end of the day and you kind of feel pooped from all the emotional back and forth that's gone on, but there are definitely those fleeting moments where you feel like, I really made a connection with this person, and maybe there's going to be a change, and maybe there'll be some brightness in their lives. That was definitely something that was very powerful, I think, for all of us.
Right, exactly. And then you have those moments, as I shared to you before we went live here, that, I mean, are really, and there's so many of them, actually, that are really human moments, moments that I think all of us can kind of look at and say, wow, you know, I can see myself doing that. I know when I was reading parts of it, I thought, you know what, you know, I can see myself in this. I mean, was that also part of your hope that people would be able to realize that even though you are a doctor, even though you're in the medical profession, that you are still human and that you handle things like a lot of us do?
Well, I don't know if you're talking about the time when I referred to wanting to lay my head down on the table and bang my bang my head against the desk.
Yeah.
There were definitely moments like that I allowed for in the book, yeah.
So you know, because you're the author, you had the choice of what you could include and what you didn't have to. Why did you decide to let us into that side of yourself?
Well, you know, for me, again, I think it was really my whole aim in writing this book was really to make this time accessible to people outside of the epidemic. You know, I think doctors or people who are involved with HIV or you know, affected by HIV, it'll definitely hit those people. But also, you know, in our country, this was such a raging epidemic in the early 90s, and people sort of knew about it, but it was sort of other. And so I felt like it is important for people to be aware of how much a part of our common history this epidemic is. And for me, that was by allowing my personality, if you will, to be in the story. I think that gives just a lay reader more access to it.
I totally agree. That's definitely what I took away from it, Susan, when I was reading it. And I think it again reminds us that something else that I think, and I have been guilty of this because I also do a news program, and sometimes you get so caught up in just referring to people as numbers. And I think your book helps us to remember that these are people.
Yeah.
And so when we hear the statistics of X amount living with HIV, that those are people's, you know, their husbands, their wives, their sisters and brothers, and our friends. And I think that's the other side of this. Was it also part of what you hope would be a takeaway, that these are people just like people around us?
Well, I'm so glad you made that point, actually, because, I mean, Voices in the Band, why I chose the title that I did, so many of those of my patients are people that might not otherwise be remembered, really. And they're people that many of whom live on really the margins of society, and you might not know anything about them depending on how you live your life. And I felt this was one way to just acknowledge some of those people, for the individuals mentioned in the book, they represent so, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of others who did die. So, you know, your point of just, yes, be behind each number, each statistic, those are real people. They're real parents or children or brothers or sisters or lovers or friends, whatever. You know, they're real people.
Right. Exactly. You know, there was one thing that I knew I wanted to talk to you about, and we're going to then let our listeners know how they can stay connected with you, Susan, and get the book for themselves. And that is, you know, I think one of the worst things that can happen, and I'm very grateful about all of the progress that has been done. I'm very grateful at the work that individuals like yourself have done. But I do believe that one of the things that we've even talked about on the show was that there are some people that choose to be careless because they think, well, I don't have to die. I can live with it, you know, and they don't, you know, do the things that you know, they know they should as responsible adults, especially. I mean, is that also something that you want, you know, especially as you look at the various individuals, and I love the fact that it's so eclectic, the individuals that you are able to show us in the book, to remind us that HIV and AIDS is not just for a certain group of people. It's something that can infect and affect us all.
Yeah, that's a great point also. And that is, for me, it's disheartening when I see a new patient who happens to be, you know, a young gay man, because this is something that is so avoidable But because patients are living longer and doing well and maintaining perfectly healthy lives, really, there's a lot more HIV out there because the total, you know, the total number of people with HIV is growing because people are living longer. So, but people need to be careful. They just need to be aware that this is a transmissible condition that is preventable. And so, you know, I can tell you that when I have a new young gay man as a patient, you know, they're not happy to be in my office. You know, they may have thought, oh, this could never happen to me. It's no big deal. I'll just take pills. But when they're in my office, they are not happy to be there. And that's, you know, it's I think, a failing on, you know, on political levels for sex education and things like that that I don't really go into. But, you know, I think just general awareness could be and should be heightened so that we get those numbers of new infections to come down instead of going up.
Yeah. I think that is really it. You know, I think the way that you close the book, I think, is really something. And, again, it goes to that human side of what this work does to an individual. And that's another thing I've never thought about before reading this book, Susan, is what seeing the cases and the faces and knowing the stories must do to individuals in your profession. You say this in the book about that. I put my head back against the couch and look at the city streetlights casting long shadows on the ceiling. All the faces and memories flow past and over me. I am changed. I am the same. I feel thankful. And then you say this, all of my patients, all I've learned and all I've experienced, I wish some things had worked out differently, but I can resolve only to listen and keep learning. So much I've seen and so much more still to see. In this moment, I am overwhelmed with a feeling of gratefulness. Talk to us about that, what that feels like to know that you have made a difference and you have been one of those individuals that have stood up for others.
Well, I'm so moved that you read that part, but I can only say that, you know, I feel so fortunate to have been a part of this change that was able to be brought about in the epidemic and part of the team that I was on. But, you know, ultimately as a physician, it is the patients who impact us. You know, we don't necessarily always tell our stories back to patients, but
right.
But that what patients bring to their encounter with us and what we take away from it as doctors, but as people, you can't ignore that, and it doesn't get, you know, tucked under the rug. It really informs each successive day. So it's I think it's for me anyway. I just feel really very very proud to have been part of this, but really very truly very grateful.
Yeah. Well, I know there are a lot of people that are grateful for individuals like you, Susan, and that's why a book like this is so important. Again, everyone, Dr. Susan C. Ball has been our guest today. Great conversation, Susan. Voices in the Band is the title of the book, already a number one bestseller on Amazon.com, A Doctor, Her Patients, and How the Outlook on AIDS Care Changed from Doomed to Hopeful. And it's that hopeful spirit that I think so many people carry on, Susan. Susan, you know, this book is, as I mentioned, available on Amazon.com. It'll be available in various platforms, including for those Kindle readers out there. You know, is that the best place for people to go, Susan, to find out about the book, or do you have a website you'd like to give out as well?
I have a website that has been undergoing a little renovation at SusanBallMD.com. Thanks for asking. I think people can also get the book at Barnes & Noble now and also at Cornell University Press.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I thank you for the time today. I think it's a conversation that needs to be had, definitely a conversation that we will continue here in our program, and we know that you will continue to inspire people through this book, and that's the great thing about it. And it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime.
Thank you so much.
All right, you're more than welcome. Definitely want to thank our good friend Gail Leander Wright, of course, for setting up this conversation with us for today. And we want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us, both for our radio audience as well as those tuning in online. Now, if you're joining us on the radio dial, there's more Conversations Live to come, so you guys stay where you are. If you are joining us online, though, that is going to end this segment for you guys, but don't worry, if you came in late, you can always catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is available on our social media pages at facebook.com/CyrusWeb, or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Click on that link. You can listen to the show completely for free and even share it with your friends using the social media buttons that you will find there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.